Ronnie's gone. No, Ronnie's still there. That was a great talk, and thanks for the walk down the Yellowbrick Road. How many of you were up early enough this morning to see this beautiful rainbow around 6:30 this morning in Lincoln? So it's my story somewhere over the rainbow. I was going to actually follow this to the west and see where the pot of gold was, but I was pretty sure it was going to be in Clay Center. So I just didn't bother doing that. So Jackie asked me to kind of give a talk about the evolution of commercial DNA testing in the beef industry, and at the same time, I think, tell the GeneSeq story, because the two are kind of tied hand in hand, hip to hip. So that's what I'm going to try and do today. I could really give this talk with one slide, and that is how things have changed. And if we go back to just about 1998, we were running single marker tests with very crude technology and looking for single gene effects with a large impact on phenotype. And as Ronnie said, these exist, but they're few and far between. And fast forward 10 years later, and we're running SNP chips with hundreds of thousands of markers on them and looking to do genomic selection. And 10 years from then, in 2018, will we simply be sequencing all of the animals that we're interested in? So it's really an amazingly quick, considering how quantitative genetics works, amazingly quick evolution from very, what we now think is archaic technology to tremendous innovations in SNP chips, and eventually simply taking every animal and figuring out its entire DNA sequence and what that might mean. I remember the first commercial DNA marker. There may have been some before this, but the first one that I remember was this prolactin, growth hormone and prolactin markers in Holstein bulls from the University of Wisconsin. And I believe there was actually a commercial test for this within the specific sires where these markers existed. You're all familiar with some of the major gene markers in beef cattle, like coat color testing. You know, this is what we would call the low-hanging fruit. And I know there's a talk here, I think by Matt later, called the high-hanging fruit. I'm really interested to hear that one. But what we were harvesting all this time was the low-hanging fruit. When I gave my first talk at BIF, I actually found the slides and scanned it in back in Ames in 1994. How many of you were at that meeting? Not too many of you. All right, good. A few of you. And we were talking back then about finding genes and marker-assisted selection, but the paradigm back then was that we would actually identify the genes that impacted all the phenotypes that we're interested in, test them, and select for them. Not that we were going to track the entire genome with hundreds of thousands of markers, because we couldn't have even dreamed about that at that point, and done genomic selection like we're doing today. And it was around the same time that I started the company GeneSeq, myself and my partner, Abe Uman. So this is in 1998. Abe, I was then at the University of Nebraska, animal breeding faculty with Merlin Nielsen and Roger Johnson and Dale Van Black, a great group here in Lincoln. Abe was a senior scientist at a company called Lycor, which was one of the first companies to make DNA sequencers. And I was thinking about starting a company to do genotyping, and Abe was thinking about starting a company to do sequencing. We didn't know each other, but our Fisher science representative put us together, and we started the company GeneSeq. We leased a lab in a building that really doesn't really exist anymore. It's not functional anymore, but this was the University of Nebraska Technology Park, and they had an incubator. So you're able to go in and get a little bit of space and try and grow your egg until it hatches and then succeed and move out. Used our credit card to buy a PCR machine, so this was about $5,000, I think, at the time. And from Abe's company, Lycor, we leased on a month-to-month basis a DNA analysis machine. So we got our space, we invested about $15,000 of our money into starting GeneSeq. We put up a shingle and we started to do business. And early on, as you might imagine, it was relatively slow going. So this is our revenue growth from the beginning, where we made 50 grand our first year, $250,000 in year two, and $500,000 in year three. And we were starting to build an infrastructure to do DNA testing, but there weren't a lot of things that we could test for. So just like Ronnie was talking about, and the low-hanging fruit that I introduced, there wasn't enough content to really provide a lot of information to the industry at this time. But we were dreaming big, and so was the rest of the industry. And the next BIF meeting that I spoke at was in Wichita. More hands for this one? Wichita 2000? And all my, I'm in the med school now at UNC, and all my colleagues are in Boston and San Diego and, you know, Thailand and Singapore, and I'm always talking about the meetings in Wichita and Des Moines and Lincoln and Ames, and I wouldn't trade with them for the world, but they get a kick out of it. So at this time, we started to think a little bit bigger, beyond the low-hanging fruit. And this was an actual slide that I presented at, I think it was the Emerging Methods workshop at that meeting, where I laid out the design of what we called a DNA selection chip. Some chips had already been introduced to the industry, not for doing DNA testing, but for looking at gene expression at the RNA level. So that the technology of looking at hundreds or thousands of genes at a time was starting to become available. So we thought about, okay, what if we knew all the genes that controlled all these traits? We can put it on a chip. And this is a direct quote from the paper that I wrote for the proceedings of that meeting, that at some point in the future, a breeder can take a hair root from a newborn calf, swish it around in a simple buffer, spread the solution on a glass slide called the DNA selection chip, insert the chip into a special port on a laptop computer, input data regarding the producer's particular selection or management needs, and within minutes obtain a highly accurate EPD. I had no clue that this would actually happen. It was just fun to talk about and to think about it and to put out there. And you know, we talk about myths and realities and overselling biotechnology. This was an oversell, but it was to try and get people excited. And almost all of this has taken place, except inserting the chip in a special port on a laptop computer. You probably could do that. Wait for Illumina to come up with that app. And within minutes, it's actually within days instead of within minutes. What took this kind of crazy oversell and made it actually a reality? There were three main things that happened. First of all, some really good statistical geneticists and quantitative geneticists were starting to work out the statistical algorithms that would be required to take 50,000 DNA markers and incorporate that into a genomic selection paradigm that would give you a genetic evaluation of the animal. So their conclusion was that selection on genetic values predicted from markers could substantially increase the rate of genetic gain in animals and plants, especially if combined with reproductive techniques to shorten the generation intervals. So this is in the year 2000, 2001. Around the same time I was giving that talk at BIF, around the same time Jerry Taylor was talking about all these things, starting his company, Genomic FX, and many other people were starting to dream along these lines as well. So the baseline quantitative genetics methods were being worked out. The other second of the three big things that happened is that, as you've heard now many times, the DNA sequence of cattle became a reality. So this was in 2005, 2006. And then followed shortly thereafter by the pig and the sheep. And now, of course, we have complete genome sequences and are starting to implement genomic selection across many other species as well. And then the third thing, three things that happen, right? So the statistical algorithms, the DNA sequence, and the SNPs from the HapMap. And then the third thing that happened is that very innovative private companies began to develop methodology where we could take all of this information and put it into an easy-to-use assay. So this is the press release when Illumina announced the 50K chip in collaboration with the USDA and the University of Missouri and the University of Alberta. And I apologize if I'm missing anybody. I think I got it. And so this was a way to take all of those SNPs that were coming out of that HapMap project, put it on that DNA selection chip that we had talked about a bit several years beforehand, and make it into an actual functional asset. So once those three things came together, GeneSeq really tied their wagon to this Illumina chip paradigm. So GeneSeq became the first certified service provider for Illumina technology in the agricultural market. And the rest has been really exciting to watch. So the dairy industry, and it, you know, when you get a picture of a dairy-bound barn on the cover of Forbes magazine, you know it's pretty big news. And this is Kurt Van Tassel. You've heard him talked about in this meeting, and the article about genomics revolutionizing the dairy industry. And revolutionizing is always a difficult word to use, but in this case, it could be potentially accurate because genomic selection is an integral part now of dairy cattle breeding, and it's starting to become, as you know, a very important part in beef cattle breeding as well. Ronnie talked about the various challenges. We've been talking about that since those early BIF meetings. Many breeds, many traits, many environments, much harder to implement across beef cattle than in dairy cattle, but breed by breed, it's certainly a doable paradigm. So, have you all heard the commercials? Remember the commercials by BASF that at BASF, we don't make the products you love, we make the products you love better? Remember that? So the next few slides, I'm going to talk about GeneSeq's relationship, very symbiotic relationship with Illumina, and helping to implement genomic selection on a global scale across many different agricultural species. The first phase of this, GeneSeq and Illumina phase one, at GeneSeq we don't make the Illumina chips. We make the Illumina chips cheaper. And I'm going to bring Ronnie Green back into this. I think he's left. But I'm going to bring Ronnie Green back into this because he actually played an integral role in this paradigm of helping to bring the cost down. When the 50K chip came out, it was very expensive. I think the chip itself costs $250, maybe $300, which obviously is too much for you all to use in your breeding program. But when Ronnie Green joined Pfizer, they had a very ambitious R&D program that required many thousands, well over 10,000 50K chips. And he came to GeneSeq to partner with us on providing the genotyping on these chips. And Abe and I said, okay, we're going to take Ronnie Green's 15,000 chips. We're going to double or triple that and put an order in an Illumina that's going to just make their head spin and give us an amazing price. And that's exactly what happened. We went to Illumina with a purchase order for a volume of chips that was way beyond their normal order, and we negotiated a great price out of this. And that has been a continuing paradigm in our relationship with Illumina. We're constantly testing the limits here. We go to Mike and to Margo and say, well, what if we have 1 million samples? What if we have 5 million samples? We eventually hit a floor, but we're constantly pushing the envelope of trying to get cheaper and cheaper reagents because implementing genomic selection in cattle and in pigs and in chickens, think about chickens, you know, you have to have low cost. It's not like doing genomics and biomedicine. Same technology, as far as Illumina is concerned, but a completely different cost paradigm in terms of the value added that you get. That was our first part of the relationship. Second part, continuing on with this BASF paradigm, GeneSeq and Illumina phase two, at GeneSeq we don't make the Illumina chips. We make the Illumina chips better. And this is not a dig on Illumina, this is exactly the paradigm that Illumina wanted to happen. And let me explain this to you. So, Illumina introduced, I can't even remember the date, it's maybe 4 years ago, a paradigm called add-on content. And I'm going to read this to you because it's really small. But it says, we are especially excited about the product's new add-on capabilities, which will allow customers to design new content for their existing customer arrays using markers found through ongoing GWAS and sequencing efforts. So we really, at GeneSeq again, we latched on to the opportunity that Illumina was providing to the marketplace. And at the same time, they were just releasing what's called the low-density chip, a 7,000 SNP chip. So the 50K had been out already. Now what we were looking for was a low-density chip to try and do imputation up to the 50K. So Illumina introduced a low-cost, low-density chip, and GeneSeq utilized this add-on capability to take this low-density chip and add on additional value-added content for the industry to use all in one stop with one sample. And that resulted in what we call and what you know as the GGP, the GeneSeq Genomic Profile. So I'll just give you an example of how this works. We have their 7K chip, and then we took markers that diagnose many of these different diseases, and we built assays and added them in to the 7K chip. This was exactly the kind of paradigm that Illumina wanted to happen with the add-on capability, and we were scouring the literature in both dairy cattle and beef cattle to put in as much added value content as we could into this GGP. We're now on our third generation of the GGPLD, and I'm announcing today that the new chip is about to come out. It now has about 26,000 SNPs on it, so this is would be called GGP3. You've been using so far GGP2, and this reduces the spacing from 383 kb to 102 kb. It includes, of course, all the common parentage SNPs, and now more than 20 verified disease and trait markers are included in the GGP3 low-density SNP, and I believe this is available. The other innovation we took using the Illumina add-on model is that we combine all three of the off-the-shelf Illumina chips into a single tool that could be used to augment the 50K chip. So I'll set this in motion. We took the SNPs that were most used from the 50K, we took all of the chips from the low density, and then we filled it in with SNPs that came off the 777,000 SNP chip. And this resulted in what we call the GGP-HD, or the GGP high density, or the 80K chip. And we are now releasing the second generation of this GGP chip. Not releasing, we're announcing it. It's going to take about 6 months before we can offer this. And this is expected to now move up to about 150,000 SNPs. We expect this to replace use of the 50K and the 80K. These are chips that you would use to develop your training populations. Right? These aren't probably the chips you're going to use in high volume to test your breeds, but these are the chips you're going to use to set up your algorithms, your prediction models, and develop your training populations and strengthen your training populations, and then switch to the LD chips for imputation. And the uptake of these tools and other tools in the beef cattle industry have been tremendous. So we go back to when we first started and we didn't have a lot of content to give to the industry. Now that we have good content and people out there are developing great models to use this content in genomic selection, this is just a list of the various breed associations that are utilizing these tools at various stages, of course, but all are utilizing genomic technology. If I left everyone off, I sincerely apologize. So now let's go back and think about what happened here with GeneSeq. So Abe and I started this company in 1998. There was just the two of us. We had a vision to provide affordable, and flexible DNA analysis for agribusiness. That was always our vision, and it still is the vision today. Affordable is key, as we've talked about. It has to be a good value proposition. It can't cost hundreds of dollars and make sense to you. We began with one student intern from the University of Nebraska that we paid $1 an hour from the Kauffman Entrepreneurial Center. Now, there are 90 FTE and many robots that work at GNC. We began with 600 square feet of space, and GNC is about to open a new lab with 30,000 square feet of space. And about 1 million DNA samples across many different species are going to be processed through the lab this year with company revenues of about $30 million. So as you all know, probably, about 4 years ago, Abe and I sold our stock in the company to Neogen, which was a much larger publicly traded agribusiness in Lansing, Michigan. And that has formed a new GNC, a Neogen company, with still the same vision, but the mission of genomic solutions for food security, helping to make enough food for mankind. Since the acquisition of GeneSeq by Neogen, Neogen has also acquired and folded in to the GeneSeq company the Igenity program from Marriott and the Cidara Genomics program, which you all may know as MMI Genomics. So these have all been purchased and put into the GeneSeq facility. So from this idea of genomic selection and this chip that we had back in the year 2000, GeneSeq now has chips, many different flavors of chips across many different species, animal, plant, research models as well. One of them in particular that I like to talk about is we have a eucalyptus chip. And the reason I wanted to mention eucalyptus is not only because almost all the toilet paper in the world is made from eucalyptus, and it's kind of cool to do genomics to help improve toilet paper. It's cool. My kids finally have something that they're interested in, and I do. But eucalyptus, interestingly, it's a very similar paradigm to cattle. It's about the same generation interval. And they do progeny testing. They have one difference, they can self-generate. That would be nice if you could do that in cattle. But it's about the same paradigm. So they were using chips in training populations to develop prediction models. And then they're going to move to a low-density chip and do genomic selection to do breeding of better eucalyptus trees that make better toilet paper. Kind of cool. So today, GeneSeq released a press release announcing GeneSeq's new lab. How many of you are going to be able to make the tour on Saturday or have seen it already? Good. It's very exciting. We have like 30,000 square feet, but 80% of the revenue comes from this table with our Illumina iScan sitting on it. But it's kind of amazing what goes in to getting the samples into these iScans. So we'll do just a brief little tour. When Abe and I started GeneSeq and we had 600 square feet, we walked into that lab and looked at that now puny 600 square feet, and we said to each other, what are we ever going to do with all of this space? We were just terrified of this space. Now, this is the storage facility within the new GeneSeq. It's about 10 times the size of that original lab, and this is simply to safely store your samples and to accurately retrieve them whenever necessary to do so. The generator that they've put into this new facility, so that if the power goes off, we can still do all of your testing safely, is about as big as the original lab that Abe and I leased at the technology park. And just finally, a kind of schematic of what happens to the samples when they come in. And it's just an illustration that commercial testing in the cattle industry has really changed from the old days when you would get a couple of samples and you would open up the box and, you know, we'd get a hoof or an ear and it would say Bessie on it and you'd do the testing and you'd call somebody up with the result. It's a real quality control industry now, just like you would expect from watching CSI or something like that. This is just the flow of samples and QC from when you submit a sample to when you get results. So the challenges, and I'm about to finish up now, the challenges that I see in the continuation of commercial DNA testing in the cattle industry are twofold. And I call them expansion and contraction. So on the one hand, we need to keep giving more information. So that's why we're trying to make our chips have more content and capture more of the DNA information that exists in your beef cattle. And on the other hand, we need contraction. We need to be able to deliver less information that costs a lot less. So it's one thing to give better and bigger tests and charge a lot of money for it. But the real power will be unleashed when we can get the cost down, deliver enough content, but get the cost down where you're testing all of your animals and not just the top of the genetic pyramid and maybe the bull dams. And that contraction has been our biggest challenge and probably the biggest challenge in the industry. And I think the answer lies in sequencing, both the high end and the low end. I think within months in some cases and years in other cases, all of this information is going to be going through sequencers and not on the chips that we currently provide. And that could be a targeted panel of parentage SNPs that's delivered cheaply through the sequencer, or sequencing the entire DNA information from your elite animals and getting all the information you can out of them. And that, I'll thank you for your attention. I'm happy to take any questions.